We remember from Acts chapter 2, verse 22, that there are three Greek words for miracle. One is for power. And typically in English we have miracles, signs, and wonders. But the word for miracle is where we get power, dynamo, dynamite. So it shows God's power, how great God is, his almighty power. And it's a sign that points to who he is, that it's not the primary, it's the secondary. God is the primary. It's a sign, the miracle is a sign that points to who God is. So power, signs, and wonders. And it's a wonder. You and I, that's how we should be responding, in astonishment, in wonder, in worship of who God is and how great he is. And not stare only at the miracle itself, because it's a sign that points to who God is. It shows his great power. Now we're working through the miracles of Jesus in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And we are up to walking on the water, the miracle when Jesus walked on the water. We'll be looking at Matthew 14, chapter 14, verses 22 to 33. And this is also found in the other two, in Mark 6, 45 to 52, and in John chapter 6, verses 14 to 21. So it's a prominent miracle that's in all three synoptic gospels accounts. We remember last week, feeding of the 5,000 men, it says, so we know there were women and children also. And that's the only miracle of Jesus that's in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Very, very, very prominent miracle. We're going to look at this text, and we're going to look at it four different this is the broad outline: a purposeful constraint, omniscient care, magnificent revelation, and centered focus. So let's read here from Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 to 33. Matthew 14, 22 to 33. Hear now the word of God. Immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. While he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was alone there. But the boat was now in the middle of the sea, this big lake, Sea of Galilee, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. Now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid." And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." So he said, "Come." And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said to him, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. Then those who were in the boat came and worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." May God bless the reading of his word to our hearts and lives by the Holy Spirit. So, in the first section there on purposeful constraint, I should say this here. This here is a general statement that we should be thinking about difficulties in our lives. The disciples here are in a boat, and we're going to be talking about it a little bit, but rowing like mad, going nowhere in a terrible storm. And many of them are experienced fishermen. A biblical way for Christians to see their difficult experiences is at times between deliverances. Have difficult, various difficult experiences. To see them as times between deliverances. God delivers his people again and again. God delivered us and still delivers us. Good verse is 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 10. Turn over and just look briefly at 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 10. Who delivered us, that's past tense, who delivered us from so great a death and does deliver us, present tense, in whom we trust that he will still deliver us. God delivers his people again and again and again. So we are to be looking for, when we're experiencing difficulties in our lives, something tough to deal with, is to say, Lord, this is another opportunity for you to deliver me. Help me to trust in you, to rest in your faithfulness, your care over my life. The miracle here immediately follows the feeding of the 5,000 men. If you look right there in Matthew 14, it's right before. In verses 13 to 21. In verse 21 it says, now those who had eaten were 5,000 men besides women and children. Now, we would say, okay, why? You notice in verse 22 of Matthew 14, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side. He's going to meet up with them later. Say, why in the world did he do this immediately? Well, turn over to John 6:15. John 6:15. Therefore, when Jesus perceived that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, he departed again to the mountain by himself alone. When evening came, his disciples went down to the sea and got into the boat and went over the sea. Okay. So it's a shortened version of the story in John 6. But you can see the feeding of the 5,000 is right before it in John chapter 6, verses 1 through 14. And in verse 15, Jesus says that he perceived that the people, the multitudes, wanted Christ to be an earthly king. They wanted him to be an earthly king, to take him by force and make him their earthly king. Food at times can be tough. Wouldn't it be nice to have him as an earthly king to take care of and make sure we have food to eat all the time? From the 5 barley loaves and the 2 small fish. Well, think of this. This is what one scholar said. A crown without a cross was not why Christ came. A crown without a cross was not why Christ came. He didn't come just immediately to be a king, to have a crown. Crowns go on kings. A crown without a cross was not why Christ came. 1 Peter 1:11, we've been going through 1 Peter Sunday evenings. Sufferings, the prophets of old were inquired into what was said about what was being prophesied about Christ, of the sufferings and the glories to follow. The sufferings, the cross, and the glories to follow. His reign and rule as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords after he ascended to heaven. So Christ had to first suffer before he was going to be exalted as King. after the resurrection and ascending to heaven to sit on the throne at God's right hand. So Christ, as we see in Matthew 14, 22, back in Matthew chapter 14, verse 22, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat. He made them. This isn't like, well, if you'd like to get in the boat. No, he made them. And now Christ knew the storm. He's omniscient. He has all knowledge. He knew the storm they would experience of what was ahead in their journey, in their travels. One scholar estimated this, that in about 6 hours, to get from where they were to the middle of the Sea of Galilee, maybe in 6 hours or so, based on the timeline that's recorded in these accounts, in about 6 hours they moved only about 3 miles, rowing like crazy, trying to go in this wild storm. And we would say, okay, why did God send them out into this great storm? Well, it's a possibility. God may be preventing a greater trouble by allowing us to experience smaller ones. It was better for the disciples to be there than falling for the ideas of the people who wanted only an earthly king. He didn't want the disciples sitting around all of these multitudes after the feeding of the 5,000 men. And Jesus knew, he's omniscient, he perceived, he knew their intent of the multitudes after they were fed with the miracle of the breaking apart of the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. He perceived, God knows the hearts of men, right? 1 Kings 8:39, God alone knows the hearts of all the sons of men. So he knew, but he didn't want the disciples to fall for that false notion. So he can prevent a greater trouble. It would be greater for them to just think he's only an earthly king than to experience the smaller trouble of the storm at sea. And we ourselves, we have to keep this in mind too, with car accidents, things that happen in our life that delay us. Like, oh, I had a schedule, I had a plan. And, well, is God protecting me from greater harm? God reigns and rules over all things, right? His sovereignty rules over all. He's the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So yes, we have to have that perspective in our mind of looking at all of our experiences, that God can be preventing greater troubles. Even though this is a tough one, we think, oh, this is a tough one. Well, God delivers us, and he delivers us, and he delivers us again and again. So we've got to rest in him, and he can be preventing us from a greater trouble in that minor trouble. Okay, this here, down below here, is the second part, omniscient care. Omniscient care. Mark records that Christ saw them straining at rowing. Turn over to Mark 6, 48. Mark 6:48. Then he, Jesus, saw them straining at rowing, for the wind was against them. That's why they hardly went any distance, rowing like crazy. And it was about the fourth watch of the night. Okay? We'll get to that in a minute. But he saw them straining at rowing. Now, I want you to think, too, when we think again, if some event occurred out here, say there was a car accident, and say there was three people that saw this event from different perspectives, each of them will add different details to give us a full picture of what happened. We know from the Old Testament Mosaic law that truth is established by two or more witnesses. God gave us more than two, right? In this miracle, we have three: Matthew, Mark, and John, who wrote it down for us. Yeah, there was more miracles than that. The disciples were all there, but we've got three written down for us of what happened. And that's where we get a fuller picture. It's not that they contradict one another, but they each give us, add more details and give us a fuller picture. Okay. Now, what should we be pondering then when we're thinking that, Christ saw them straining at rowing? This is a terrible storm. It's at night in the dark. We with modern electricity and everything, batteries and everything, we've got boats lit up on the sea and lights in here, no matter how dark it gets, right? But they're out there in the dark in a terrible storm, rowing like crazy. Supernatural sight. It's really supernatural sight. It's divine. God is omniscient. He sees all things. For omniscient care. Omniscient, omni, all, and then science with knowledge. All knowledge. God is omniscient. In that dark, it was dark at a distance in a terrible storm, and yet he saw them. It's a miracle that he saw them, actually, that in itself. But what a comfort this should be for all believers when we read this. When we lose sight of Christ, look, turn over to Job. Look at Job 23:8-9 in the Old Testament. This is Job speaking here in the middle of all of his storm of life that God permitted him to go through. What does it say here in Job 23:8-9? Look, I go forward, but he, God, is not there. And backward, I cannot perceive, I cannot see him. When he works on the left hand, I cannot behold him. When he turns to the right hand, I cannot see him. At times, it seems as if we're going through such trouble we cannot see or perceive or behold God. The disciples couldn't see him right away, but Jesus could see them. He saw them. And that's where we may lose sight of Christ, but Christ does not lose sight of us. Turn over to Isaiah chapter 40. This is one of my, I consider my most favorite chapter, I think, in the Bible, on the greatness of God. Look at Isaiah 40, verses 27 and 28. Isaiah 40, 27 and 28. Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my just claim is passed over by my God? Like, he doesn't see, he doesn't hear, he doesn't know what's going on in my life, this trouble I'm in. Verse 28. Have you not known? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, neither faints nor is weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He is omniscient. He has all knowledge. He knows what's going on in our lives. Which is why if we wait upon the Lord, verse 31, he shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles and run and not be weary and walk and not faint. Because of who God is. Okay, let me erase this here, and then we'll head over to the next part, Magnificent Revelation. J. Jason told me I should write on the back side so I can loosen these things and just flip it upside down. Yes. Fear not. Do not be afraid. Yes. I agree. Exactly. And that's how Jesus wants to provide comfort to them with who he is. Yep. On Magnificent Revelation, look at Matthew 14. We'll read 25 to 27 with what Joan is getting at here. Verse 25 through 47. Now in the fourth watch of the night, now just say this, the fourth watch of the night at that time was 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. The fourth watch of the night. The last watch. The first was 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Second, 9 p.m. to midnight. Third, midnight to 3 a.m. And then the fourth watch of the night is 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. So, in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer. It is I. Do not be afraid." When we think here of the majestic timing and way in which Christ presents himself to them. Now I want to, this is kind of interesting. It's toned down a little bit in the English. But when we read that they cried out for fear in verse 26, they cried out for fear. Cried out for fear. In the Greek, it is hysterical shrieks. Hysterical shrieks. I mean, literally shriek in terror of what they were seeing. Now, they're exhausted. They've been going like mad, rowing like mad against the wind in this terrible storm, and then to see what they can't make out at the moment, you know, in this terrible dark storm, that somebody's there walking on water, and their immediate thought was a ghost. So they cried out for fear. They had hysterical, like a madman, shrieks, which you think of, and Pastor Ron's quoted this many times with William Cowper. "Ye fearful saints, fresh courage take. The clouds ye so much dread are big with mercy and shall break in blessing on your head." William Cowper was a man who struggled with depression. In the Pilgrim's Progress, it's called despondency. We'll be getting to the Slough of Despond in Friday night youth group where started the Pilgrim's Progress. But Slough of Depression, Slough of Despond. Well, that was William Cowper. Oh, okay. Okay, so let's look at verse 27. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid." So what does he say? Be of good cheer. What is he saying there? Is he speaking like an Englishman, in like Winston Churchill? Be of good cheer. No, he's saying, take courage. He's saying, take courage. So you be of good cheer. Take courage. Courage. I think of Joshua before heading into the promised land in Joshua chapter 1, verse 9. Joshua chapter 1, verse 9. Joshua says, have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. What did Jesus say at the Great Commission? Matthew 28, verse 20. Lo, I am with you always to the end of the age. Huh? We are to take great courage. No matter what troubling experience we may have to go through in this world, no matter what storm in our life, God is with us. Because God is with us. That's what Jesus will get to next. Take courage. Be of good cheer. Why? Just like Joshua. Why? Because what does Jesus say next? It is I. I will never leave you nor forsake you. The Lord your God is with you always. Huh? That's the reason that we should take fresh courage. God is with us. Jesus said, it is I. You think of with Moses in Exodus 3:14. Who should I say sent me? God said, I am. I am that I am. It is I. I am. Which is referring to who God is. God is saying, I am the self-existent, faithful, covenant-keeping, immutable God, in other words, he does not change, who saves his people in distress. It is I am. God is the self-existent, faithful, covenant-keeping, immutable God who saves his people in distress. And in Exodus 3:14, he's saying, God keeps his promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So Moses, who do you say, you know, who should I say sent? I am. The one who is self-existent, depends on nothing. I exist in and of myself, fully sufficient, self-existent, faithful, covenant-keeping, immutable God. God made covenant with Abraham, and he keeps it. And he does not change. And he saves his people in distress. And here the Israelites, to Moses, the Israelites were in slavery in Egypt. They were in distress. Here the disciples were in the boat in the middle of the storm in distress. And then he comforted them. when he said, "Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid." It is a reminder to all of us, for straining at the oars of life's storm in our lives, that we need to remain centered on Christ. Christ is the secret to stability in life's storm. Christ himself. Christ himself is the secret to stability in life's storms. We are to keep our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. Hebrews 12:2. It's no longer I that liveth, but Christ that liveth in me. Galatians 2:20. Galatians 4:19. We want Christ formed within us. We want Christ formed within us. Christ is the one who lives it. We walk by faith in the Son of God who loved us and gave himself for us. By faith in him, we remain focused on him and Christ living in us. He will never leave us nor forsake us. Which is a transition as to the centered focus, this last part here. Centered focus. Read 28 to 33. And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." So he said, "Come." And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said to him, "O you of little faith, why do you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. Then those who were in the boat came and worshipped him, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." Now, Peter seems to have been the first here to recognize Jesus, or at least the first who dared to reply to Jesus, which is probably the case considering Peter. In verse 28, Peter answered him. The others didn't, but he did. Now, Jesus' answer to him was encouraging. He said, "Come," in verse 29, "come, walk on the water, come to me." Now, Peter entered by faith on the solid surface that Christ's presence had miraculously extended over the water. Somehow, some way, it was a miracle, right? We know gravity. Right? Things fall, right? We sink, right? There was no ice out there on the lake. They were rowing in the waves, right? You and I can go out to Foot Lake and try that once. Walk off the dock or something and we'll go right down. We'll sink. But he was walking on the water. Peter was, toward Jesus. Now we know from 2 Corinthians 5:17, we must walk by faith, not by sight, not by physical sight. We must walk by faith. Faith in Christ. What does it say in verse 30? When Peter saw the wind was boisterous. So what did he do? Was he continually looking at Jesus? No. Peter began to look at the wind, right? In verse 30. Now, that's something for us to think. The wind, in this case. You and me, it may be something else. This, if I'm dealing with an illness, I could be looking at the illness. If I'm dealing with trouble with school, I could be looking at the trouble at school. And whatever the case may be, whatever tough, troubling experience we're going through, it's a reality, no doubt. But yet we've got to remain focused on Christ by faith in Him. As verse 30 says, when he looked at the wind, saw it was boisterous, he was afraid. Not of good cheer, not courageous. Now courage, that's where you see a danger, that's why it's a realism. Just like Joshua dealing with the Israelites going into the promised land with the giants there and the enemies. You understand there's a danger, you understand the problem, you understand the trouble. Peter at first did. He was courageous. Command me to come to you. And Jesus said, come. And he goes, steps right out of the boat and starts walking on the water. That was courageous. Where you see a danger and you go ahead with it anyway. That's courage. That's the definition of courage. It says, I know, it's like soldiers going into battle, that a great percent of them won't come back. But they go anyway. That's courage. That's what the Israelites were doing, going into the promised land to wage war against the enemies there. And you and me, though, we must have courage and not, what? Be afraid. Which is what Jesus said in the negative, do not be afraid. And he looked around at the wind and became afraid. Didn't remain focused on Christ. So he cries out in verse 30, Lord, save me. Which any one of us who cries out that prayer can be saved by Christ. Any sinner that cries out that prayer, said, Lord, save me. Have mercy upon me, a sinner. Christ will save you. Guaranteed. It is a picture of our salvation from sin. Immediately, Jesus stretched out his hand, it says in verse 31, and caught him. He didn't sink. He didn't go whoop, whoop, down underneath the water with his, right? Underneath or anything like that? No. No, it says, because it says, beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. And immediately, Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him. So he didn't sink. And we see in verse 31, immediately in verse 31 there, Jesus says to them then, says to Peter, oh, you of little faith, why do you doubt? Little faith. Not no faith. Now, when you think of another situation, we covered Jairus, the healing of Jairus' daughter, which was raising her from the dead because she Jesus didn't get there in time, right? And Jairus' daughter died. Jairus had faith that Jesus could heal his daughter. But then once he got news that she had died, he thought that's it. So he had a little faith that Jesus could heal his daughter, but not the faith that Jesus could raise her from the dead. It's the same perspective of having a little faith but not great faith. So little faith, there's examples of that, that with Jairus's. Daughter, when we think of that one, Matthew 9:18-26, for instance. There's another story there of Mark 9:46. Where he says, "Lord, I believe, help my unbelief." The man with, I think it was with the son who had convulsions. "Lord, I believe, help my unbelief." Now that's a lot of us. In Mark 9:46, "Lord, I believe, help my unbelief." And we can pray that prayer. Because a lot of us are in that situation. We've got a little bit of faith. God gave us the gift of faith. It's a little. It's not great. 924. Oh, I'm sorry. 924. Did I mess that up? Thank you. "Lord, I believe, help my unbelief." Yeah, here I got 924 right there. I don't know why I wrote that down. But this is where we are to a great extent, is individuals that will take that first step and then start to sink, maybe show a little bit of faith, a little bit of courage, and then begin to look at the problems and not remain focused on Christ and his ability to handle the problems and deliver us again and again and again. Anyone who is outside of Christ, how will that person stand when the floods of God's wrath come? When the floods of God's wrath comes, which is why it's so important for all of us to cry out like Peter, "Lord, save me." We can cry that out with any trouble we're going through that we're seeking deliverance from by God. "Lord, save me." And Christ is able to save to the uttermost all those who draw near to him, because he ever lives to make intercession for them. Hebrews 7:25. "Salvation is of the Lord." Jonah 2:9. "The winds ceased." The winds ceased when they got in the boat. Verse 32. "Then those who were in the boat came and worshipped Christ, saying, Truly you are the Son of God, the eternal Son of God." One scholar says, "Why don't we worship and glorify him sooner? Why don't we do it sooner? He's the eternal Son of God." Trials drive us to Christ in worship. Think of verse 33. Trials drive us to Christ for worship. To treasure him, who he is. Miracles, again, show God's power, show Christ's divine power, the eternal Son of God. They're a sign that points to who he is as the eternal Son of God, the King of Kings, Lord of Lords. And And we are to respond with worship, with wonder. Another word in the Greek for miracle is wonder. Jesus worked many miracles, signs, and wonders, Acts 2:22. And the word for miracles is powers. Worked many powers, signs, and wonders. And we should respond with wonder and worship, saying, wow, how great is he. Okay. Let's